Welcome to Scroll Sessions. I'm Shane Hickenlooper, and I'm joined by my co-founder, Dan Page.
Together, we're the brains behind Scroll, a digital marketing agency. In this podcast, we'll explore the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, marketing, and growing a business.
Join us each week as we share our insights, our failures, and our successes with you.
Hit that subscribe button to stay updated on the latest episodes of the Scroll Sessions.
Okay, everyone, welcome to Scroll Sessions. Today we have an awesome guest, Nick Staggy. Nick has been involved with companies like GoPro, Skull Candy, and local companies like VidArmy, and now he started his own firm called The Grounded Company. And did I miss anything in there?
I mean, I've had a lot of different jobs. My career path is a train wreck, but I think you got the majority of them.
But you've done some awesome work for some massive brands.
I've done work for awesome big brands. Yes, I will say that. I've worked for them. I'm not sure it's been great, but I've been lucky enough to work for some pretty cool companies.
Yeah. Well, Nick and I went to lunch like probably 6 months ago, and I feel like we connected right off the bat. Maybe just because we're both in the agency space and we have a lot to talk about and complain about with each other, but very happy to have you here.
Honored. Thank you.
Happy to have you anytime. Like, just really respect and appreciate what you're doing at the Grounded Company too. So
thanks. Likewise.
And as a person.
Scroll gave me some cojones to try to start my own thing. So
clearly.
So how did you start Grounded Company? What gave you the idea, and maybe give people some background on what it is?
So Grounded Company, what it is today, is nothing that I had envisioned when it started. When I was 13, I was drawing a kiwi and the Grounded Company. I liked that idea, birds that can't fly. I thought that was interesting.
Is that a kiwi?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the fruit.
A
bird.
Okay.
Among other birds that don't fly, but that's that was always the one that I was drawn to. But after VidArmy famously kind of like imploded on itself, I was like, you know, I don't want to work for anyone else anymore. And I'm not even sure I want to have anyone work for me. Like, I don't think that's the right thing.
Yeah.
So I went on to LinkedIn, and as marketers do, I fibbed a little bit and I was like, hey, I own a fractional CMO consulting firm. I've got room for one more client. Anybody interested? I would have taken any client I could have gotten. In fact, I have.
Of course. For sure.
But
as you do.
Yeah.
You know, you do.
So within 24 hours, I'd signed two gigantic deals, not as a fractional CMO. I signed Breville. They're like a $1 billion home appliance company. And they were having me help them.
They're a coffee maker, aren't they?
Yeah. Among other things. But coffee maker, smart oven.
Yeah.
They had me helping them kind of rebuild their channel marketing program from scratch.
Cool.
And then Dixon Flannel called and they're like, we have this showroom in Phoenix. We know you haven't done retail in like three lifetimes, but can you help us? We think it could be massive. And I said, yes. And so I was working on those, and with the goal of either buying myself a little bit of time to get a real job or to get more clients that were truly fractional CMO type clients.
Yeah.
And then the third phone call I got was Harman Brothers, and they were like, yo, we
want to chat.
We want to chat. We have, you know, $1 million retainers. Like, we work with behemoths, and we have all these little teeny brands that want to work with us and they can't afford it.
Yep.
So we're starting this consulting branch where we hire fractional CMOs to help these smaller brands. And then they'll pitch out smaller agencies to help them grow. And I'm on fire. Like,
yeah, for
dude,
sure.
They're going to feed me fractional CMO jobs where I am only strategy, no execution.
Yeah. Like, it's like a dream job. It's my dream job, at least.
For real. It's like, I'm in. And Theron, one of the seven brothers, goes, oh, we don't need any fractional CMOs. We're looking for a creative agency. And word on the street is you own a creative agency.
And you're like,
and I was like, oh, well, how many clients could you send us? And he gives me the number, and like, and how much a month are these clients? And he gives me the number, and I'm like, yes, I own a creative agency. Like, let's do this. And true story, I am like insanely colorblind.
Okay.
and I'm not a designer.
What color is this?
I mean,
what color is it to you?
I think it's blue, but my color blindness is I can see something that's red and something green that are separate from one another. But when you put them next to each other, they blend into one color and I can't tell.
Which is probably like the worst kind to have, I would think.
It's rough.
Right? Yeah.
It's rough.
Jeez, man.
Have you ever tried the colorblind glasses?
My wife wants to get them for me, but I'm like, I can see the colors separate, just not together. Like, don't spend the money.
Maybe
on it.
Blow your whole world and just be one of those emotional videos that goes viral.
Yeah,
hey?
Yeah, I'm just bawling.
You should do that, and then that's your.
I had no
headline
idea how beautiful my kids were.
Yeah, of Grounded Company.
I had no idea my kids were blue.
But I mean, we've all heard the argument. Like, how do you know that we see the same blue that we all call blue?
Yeah,
and whatever. Like.
I could have a six-hour discussion on that.
Yeah, really interesting. Know. We've talked about that before,
I've had a lot of people get mad at me for just saying that we have no evidence that we all see the same color.
It's all based on your environment.
But we don't.
I agree.
And when you think about it, it blows my mind, at least.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's
So
one
anyway,
of life's greatest mysteries.
On that note, you're extremely colorblind, and you have a creative agency now.
So I will say, like, I'm not a designer either, so I get these clients, and they're not like small paying clients. They wanted Harmon Brothers stuff.
Yep.
So I'm like, I don't know what to do. I guess I'm going to download Canva.
I
start designing ads in Canva, and I'm delivering to the client, and they're like, hey, man, we're so glad we got a creative agency. We've been designing crap in Canva. Like, love your work. And I'm going,
like,
oh, this is not going to end well.
All right.
So I went out and I just started building a team.
Yeah.
Right. And like, we don't do anything in Canva anymore. We have real designers. I'm not designing anything. But yeah, it's just at that moment it happened. I, decided I was going to be opportunistic and take a chance. And 2 years later, here we are.
Yeah. You haven't had to go get hired anywhere else, right?
No, thankfully not.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think
I'm a terrible employee. Like, no one wants to hire me.
Every true business owner, entrepreneur is a terrible employee, I feel like, to some degree.
Everybody's got a little bit of that in them. And I think a lot of marketers, I guess, when you get to the level that I think we're at, are very similar in that regard. It's like you kind of want to get into everything.
You do.
Really?
We all think we know everything.
And we all think we know everything. And I think you're always trying to build and tear things apart.
Yeah.
I've sadly and truthfully been let go of quite a few jobs. And I think when I look back, I'm like, oh, I should have been let go, because for the last year, they didn't have me building anything new. I was just executing. And frankly, execution kind of bores me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I need someone on the team that can be a great executor. But if I'm not building something new and trying to solve a new problem, like, I'd rather just lay in bed and binge watch Clarkson's Farm or something.
Yeah.
Clarkson's Farm.
That's
Farm. There's a
awesome.
Dude, I don't know if you've seen that show.
What is it on?
Isn't that Jeremy? Isn't that with the cars and stuff?
Yeah. You know Jeremy Clarkson from Top Gear?
He's like the Top Gear guy.
Top Gear is where they drive expensive cars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He's the tall, main guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's a bit of a prick. He like punched somebody.
He's got quite the rap sheet.
Yeah. So I think Top Gear kind of shut down and he was like, I want to make a farm. So it's two full seasons now on Amazon Prime of
really cool.
Learning how to farm like 500 acres in England. And it's awesome. It is such a good show.
Dude, I love that kind of stuff, especially.
Yeah.
Well, you probably like it because you're opportunistic, right? And he just like found this new opportunity and went for something he didn't understand. So he gets to learn something new every day. And that resonates with you because that's the person you are.
Yeah. 100%. I do think, I don't know if you guys know Craig Jarman or Matt Wonderly. Craig Jarman owns Pajamas. Literally a pajama that your kids can pee in without diapers.
Interesting.
Okay. I need those.
Very interesting.
Right. For myself. I'm getting old enough that I need them for me now.
Well, we just finished potty training a couple months ago, so those would have come in handy. I didn't know about those.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's a wild time potty training.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so when I first started Grounded, I was sharing a office with them that was like a third of the size of this room.
Mm.
And Craig and Matt were both like, dude, you just need to keep your eyes open for opportunities and then have the guts to say yes to when it presents itself. Like, I think Craig did a really good job coaching and teaching me that building something is really hard, but if you can sell something and then build it, it's way easier.
Yeah.
And so totally. That's just kind of like, I've got all these sister agency ideas, things that are happening, and you'd be surprised how easy it is to sell something that doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I mean, that's how we got started. That was basically what we did for the first couple months. We literally didn't know how to fulfill. And we just were like, let's just ask people what they want. Let's start talking to customers. Let's start talking to who we felt was going to be our ideal target audience, and let's figure out what they want. And then let's just go build it after we sell it.
Dude, I am such a believer in
that. And that's classic, I think, one entrepreneur, classic marketer too.
And you probably lost the vast majority of your first clients.
Yep.
As an agency, you're never going to keep all of them, right? Yep. Like, there's always going to be churn. I think the churn happens faster, but at least you got in and you were selling and you were learning. We're working on spinning up a sister company right now called The Underground. And one of the guys who's coming in to help, he's like, okay, so month one is really about like our own branding, our website. It's about like, what's the process? What are all the packages? And I was like, no, it's not. Month one is, can we close 5 deals? And he's like, well, what are we selling? I'm like, whatever people want, but can we close 5 deals? And if we can close them, then we figure out what our packages are. Then we figure out how to start delivering against it. And he was like, that seems dangerous. And I'm like, dude, if we're here 30 or 60 days after starting a business and we haven't sold anything, none of us are even going to care about the business.
Yeah. Yep. Like, exactly.
Revenue keeps you interested.
Yep.
100%. So start with that. And I think that's it's risky and it's scary, but I think it's way riskier to waste time building something that you have no idea if someone's going to buy or not.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy, because you see like a lot of these guys in Silicon Valley that like don't even have a legitimate product, and they get $120 million worth of investment or whatever, right? And they don't even have an audience. They don't even have users yet. And that's like, that kind of boggles my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy. I think people are starting to
catch on to that a little
catch
bit.
Catch on to that. I mean, look at all the rifts that are happening.
Cash flow is sexy now. People want bootstrap cash flow businesses, and investors are turning to that saying, 100%. Okay, wait, you have 5 years history. You've been profitable. You bootstrap. You don't have debt. Investors are now starting to say, that's interesting, compared to, okay, you have a cool idea. You've never sold anything in your life. Let me give you $5 million.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I think that's shifting, and it needs to, because it's it's just bonkers working for companies that are like, we don't care about profitability. We don't care about
which is
we just crazy. Need growth. I'm like, profitability is growth, bro. Yeah. Like,
same thing.
Yeah. Well, then you run down the line and you're laying off 10% of your staff because, you know, profitability.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that I think is interesting that you said, especially for the agency world, is we kind of got started the same way, where we knew that we were salespeople, right? And I think a lot of agency owners confuse themselves with being salespeople and marketers, when really, when you're starting an agency, a lot of people are salespeople and not marketers. They know enough to be dangerous. And what we have done, all of us, is said, we're going to go and sell, and then we're not going to go and deliver some garbage product to people. We might hire a freelancer to deliver on it. We might white label that service.
We might use Canva.
Yeah, we use Canva.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're going to do all we can to provide a solution for the customer and learn along the way. And I think that that's really insightful, because a lot of people that start businesses think, I have to have some intrinsic skill that is valuable in order to start a business. And at the end of the day, you don't. You just have to be a really good salesperson and know someone that can fulfill
and provide a solution. Yeah. At the end of the day, you really just need to know how to provide the solution. That's it. You can connect the dots. And that's how it is in the agency world. And I think a lot of people, I guess, maybe don't realize that or don't take advantage of it more.
Yeah, I think you're right. I totally agree. It's it reminds me of this story when I was at VidArmy, and we were selling video for $500. And no one thought we could be profitable.
No one thought you guys could do that.
Dude, everyone was like, oh, your $500 offer is like Costco chicken. You're you're getting your ass handed to you on margin, but you're making it up on the upsell. Yeah. And I was like, actually, our Costco chicken's a cash cow for us because of our process. Like we taught someone who'd never done video how to set up this. We had someone professionally set up our studio.
Yep.
Taught him how to set the camera. And it was the same setup every time. We'd hit record for an hour. I paid that guy $15 an hour.
Yeah.
So a $500 video, $15 in payroll. Then I would send it to the Philippines and I'd have my editor work on it for no more than 4 hours at $5 an hour.
Yeah.
I'm $35 in on a $500 product. Like I was making money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Hand over fist. And I had an agency, another video agency call me and he was like, hey, I know we don't know each other, but I want to take you to lunch.
Yeah.
The industry is really small in Salt Lake. Like let's get together. Let's meet up. And it was kind of like low key threatening the whole, whole lunch. He's just like, you know, we're all talking about you guys and like,
Oh, you're making waves
and, and it's not going to go well for you. And
it's and a threat, lunch.
Yeah, it was, dude. And it was,
which is crazy.
But he kept trying to position it. Like I'm coming to you like as a friend. I'm like, I don't know you. And you're over here like,
I'm coming to you as a friend. Stop but selling.
Well, and I'll tell you like the creator, I've been plugged into the creator space here, at least locally for a long time. Because my background's as a photographer, I did quite a bit of video, but I also worked a ton with creators. And Salt Lake is really unique in the entire nation for like this very small group of people that are all creators. It's very different to even like LA or New York.
Well, we have a beautiful landscape here, and I think people get really interested in becoming
100%
photographers or videographers so that they can go and be a part of that.
Well, I know when VidArmy started, because that was before even Scroll really was a thing. Like VidArmy was definitely on the radar of the creative community.
Looked to you guys as like, how do we do the same thing? How do we offer digital marketing services for $500 a month and
make it actually good though?
The leads just flood in at that price point. So this guy, he's finally, his big final act of lunch is like, look, man, I can tell this. I know that you and most of the people at VidArmy have not spent a lot of time in video. And like, we didn't, but it was $500 video. We weren't trying to make Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah, for sure.
And he was like, And I'm just telling you as someone who's made my entire life doing nothing but video, it's the only thing I've ever done is video. You guys are going to burn some bridges and it's going to end very poorly for you. And I'm coming to you just letting you know. And after like a half an hour of me holding my breath, I was like, no, I hear exactly what you're saying. The only thing you've ever done is video. The only thing.
Yep.
The only thing I've ever done, and I apologize because this was like one of my more arrogant moments, but I'm like, the only thing I've ever done is walk into a business and figure out how to scale and grow it.
Yeah.
And that should scare the hell out of you because I don't know video. I know how to scale and grow a business and I'm going to do that and no one's going to want to work with you anymore. Hey, thanks for lunch, man. Have a good one. Yeah, I just got up later. And walked out. And now become friends.
Well, that's good.
He messaged me like a month later and he was like, hey man, I realized that was kind of like, I was kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And I was like, so was I. So we good?
Yeah, we're fine. You
know? But I think people like, right? Yeah, it is. But I also think it goes back to what you're saying. Like delivery is important, but really, can you identify an opportunity? Can you sell it? And can you figure out?
Can you figure out the brand piece? Work? Yeah.
And
you guys, you covered all of that, but I think that maybe the next interesting piece is it did kind of fall apart.
Oh,
VidArmy did, but that's a whole different, that's a whole other story.
It crashed and
burned. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I think maybe why do you feel like that crashed and burned?
There was real, dissent between the owners. There was just a disconnect in terms of the vision of each of them and the reality of the business.
And clarify what your role was there.
So I was initially brought in as an advisor because I was a client and I'm like, guys, I love this model.
Yeah, for sure.
But your delivery against it sucks. Like good job selling, good job showing that there's proof value. Point here.
Yeah, yeah.
Your delivery sucks. Let me help you on cleaning this up.
Yeah.
Like when I first started, they were managing every client through info@vidarmy.com. They didn't have a CRM. They weren't using, jeez, they weren't even using Trello, dude.
That's how we started.
They had a shared
it's true, email. But they had probably 10x the clients, yeah, right, they out did the gate, at the time, well, which is nutty.
They didn't have as many as any of us
maybe thought,
wanted to think or believe.
Okay.
And I learned a lesson, like due diligence is not just looking at P&L. It's actually like, yep, open your bank and let me see your bank account.
Yeah.
Because what was on the P&L when I was doing my due diligence as to be the CEO and then what I uncovered was real,
yeah,
was very different.
Which and is scary.
Dude,
that's scary.
Day one, I'm working with all of the team.
Yep.
Day two, I'm talking with all of our clients. And day three, I'm like, all right, I'm going to get into the numbers. And I open it up and I'm like, where are the other, ooh, accounts? Like, this can't be it. Where are we? And they're like, this is it. I'm like, so I had to pull the owners together. And I'm like, unless something major happens, VidArmy folds in 60 days. Like, yeah, you will be bankrupt. You have no money. You're,
yeah,
no revenue. Like, things are trouble.
So why was that the case if it was costing $35 to fulfill?
Because at the time they didn't have that process. And they were just like, $500 video, and they did it kind of for anyone, for anything. They, when we were making $500 video work, it was very specific. Like, it's only in our studio. It's only for an hour. It's only this many deliverables. If you want more than that, it's $1,000. It's $2,000, right? And we upsold.
And you had those different packages, and I remember that.
Yeah.
Because they were saying like, oh, we'll come to you an hour drive and we'll bring two people and two cameras.
Yep.
And not to mention they bought a Tesla probably, right?
They did buy a Tesla.
Great business decision.
Solid.
On the business.
Oh, God.
Writing a check for $1,000 car payment a month, I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But they also were so far behind on delivery that there was no repeat business. So they were shoveling with coal.
Yeah. That's what I remember hearing.
It wasn't the cost of the product. It was the delay in delivery that caused this like refund situation.
Oh, dude. Yes. And you start to see things like, hey, someone paid us $2,000 for 4 months of video. We haven't delivered any video still.
And it's like 8 months.
So, and the money's already been spent.
Yeah. And the money's like, gone.
What? Like, this isn't working. And at the time, one of the owners was like, hey, I've built this business. It's huge. I don't want to be involved in the day to day anymore. I just want to take a paycheck home.
Yeah.
I'm like,
some business owners eventually get to that point.
Eventually. Right.
And, yeah.
And that's what I told him. I'm like, I don't think you understand the conversation we just came from. We're 60 days from bankrupt.
Yeah.
I can't pay. I'm not sure we can pay anyone, let alone someone who's not working.
100%.
You can take a draw. And he's like, cool. Well, this is what my draw should be. I'm like, well, your draw's only on profit and you guys are bleeding cash. So like, good luck.
Yeah.
Right. And he didn't like it.
Yep.
So he went and we basically bought him out from 33% to 19. He went and started a competing agency.
Yeah.
And that was fine. Like, good for him. No beef with that. Like, that's his right. He has right to do that. He did it the right way. But he still had some cash in the cap table, right? Like, he still was a part owner. And so we had gone out and talk about selling something that you don't know how to deliver on.
Yeah, no kidding.
We got lucky and landed a deal with, by the way, we 6x'd revenue in the first 60 days I was there. So all of a sudden we had cash flow problems still, but we didn't have revenue problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got the money in.
Yeah. It was coming. And then we landed a deal with Amazon and we delivered against it and it worked pretty well. And they came back to us and they're like, all right, we want to ramp up with VidArmy, $150K a month.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're so like
creating product video.
Yep. Over the top, videos, based on clients that were already spending like $30,000 a month in ad spend with Amazon or something. Like, it was pretty specific, but the number of clients, it was drastically bonkers, increased, right? I mean, you're like, we're talking $2 million here with one client on an agency that 6 months ago was folding.
Yeah.
But Amazon's like, yeah, so cool. The way this works is you invoice after the video is delivered. and we're on net 90.
Ooh. They have a quarter to pay you?
Well, dude, brutal. These corporate clients, man, it's these enterprise level people. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
We don't have cash flow to do that.
No.
So we start going out trying to get like PO financing, maybe a loan.
Yeah.
But VidArmy had done, but prior to me getting there, had like kind of crushed their credit through loans and. Jeez. It was still a nightmare, but we end up finding two different groups that are like, we'll give you the cash. Like, we're in, but you got to clear your cap table. The only person on the cap table can be Levi and now us. Right. Yep. So we go back to the two other owners and we're talking to them and their price tag is pretty dang high. Like,
higher than it should have been. It was an emotional high,
like a 10x multiplier. which is insane,
and it's a service based business.
They knew
it's
what not you were SaaS. About to acquire.
They knew, and also I think they just frankly wanted
to dig it in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So we couldn't do it. We couldn't make that work. Mm. So we are talking with one of the potential lenders, and they're like, "Look, Levi, you'd have to agree to this. It'd suck, but." Fold VidArmy. Fold it. You guys will eat all the, you'll be on the hook for all the debt, all the everything. But we'll do a joint venture with you guys. And Nick, now you can be on the cap table. Levi, you're there. If you want, we'll just move all the clients over because you folded the business. It's fine. So we went back to the two owners and we're like, look, this is what we're going to do if you can't come to better terms. Like, we don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They found a loophole in the system that they could pool their equity together and give it away. Yeah. So they gave 52% of the total equity to a third party. And he walked in and basically said, everyone can pound sand, get out.
Yeah.
And overnight we went from, we're going to do 150K a month with Amazon alone to like,
It's over.
It's done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when you guys all had started to walk away.
Yep. And it was really mass exit. Like
business.
There were probably 20 employees and within 45 days, everyone except one had walked.
Wow.
Business partnership relationships are key. Yeah. It's like, it is make or break. If you are not doing business with somebody that you can't like have a serious conversation with and like actually get through stuff together with, man, it's over. It's over before it began, you know?
We're very lucky that we had partnered in a good way, that we have a great partnership. After 4 years, I'm like, there's no one I'd rather work with.
100%.
Than Dan. Which is awesome. And I couldn't have done it alone. I think that's a conversation we can have is you have done it alone.
Well, I haven't.
You have a team.
But on that note, I would go back for a quick second and just say, I think advice that I give to people after going through this VidArmy thing is, when you're starting a business, you're like, of course I love this person. Of course I want to go into business with this person. Like, I'd never do this person wrong. This person would never do me wrong. Like, we're good, right?
Yeah.
Write your operating agreement as if you were enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when 100%. You then, if something for some happen. Bad reason happens, you're like, we've already defined the grounds in which we're going to argue.
Yep.
We've already defined like, exactly what your buyout is, exactly how we operate here, what you can and can't do. We're just going to stick to that. And like, you take that emotion out because there's no denying, like, I'm not a fan of one of the owners of VidArmy. I'm not.
Yeah.
He's not a bad dude. He's not my favorite guy. Never gone to business with him again.
Right?
And he still operates. And I wish him nothing but success.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
I have no ill feelings towards him.
It's definitely a cautionary tale though.
But it is. It's a cautionary tale. I'm like, you know, one, if you're stepping into a startup, don't be afraid to be like, open up your bank, like show me what you got. Yep. Don't just go in. And if you're starting with someone, like go in and ask all the hard questions and document it and get it put together. And then I think it avoids the whole, like, I deserve this and you did that. And this, it's like all that crap doesn't matter anymore. It's just, it's here.
But, and you're defining your roles so early on that I think business will operate a lot more smoothly too, right?
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Well, I think that story is unique because just like in any business, everyone is going to have their own sides to how things happen, right? And everyone at the end of the day at VidArmy was a good person, yeah. wanted what was best for themselves and their families, and had different opinions on how to get there. It. And that's the point that you reference, is it's like, it doesn't matter how good of a person you are or how good of a person I am. At the end of the day, we need to have our best interest at mind, not the other person's. And that's why putting a prenup together before
exactly you go into business, what it is, dude,
is yep. super important.
Yep. And everybody, I think there's this level of ignorance where you're like, well, if we're 50-50 partners on the cap table, then we're good. And it's like, okay, your equity split is important, but the most important thing, if you're going to go into business with a partner, is the operating agreement. Like yeah. that's the one. And Jason Coleman from Avalanche, he's yeah, the guy Avalanche who Media. Really helped teach me that. He was like, dude, it is all about this operating agreement. You, yeah. when he and his three partners or two partners went in together, he was like, we've spent significant money and time going through our OA. And he was like, and about every 3 years, we yeah, all resurface and we revisit it.
Very
and,
smart.
And,
yeah.
And he was like, and sometimes that revisit takes 6 months,
yep.
but you go through it and you discuss it and you figure it out. And then you're like, cool, we'll okay, come back good. In three yep. more years or yep. whatever it is.
Yeah. That's interesting.
But I think it's a really smart move.
And I also think that having more than two business partners complicates things, because two business partners, if I have a problem, I have to face Dan. If Dan has a problem, he has to face me.
You're not like coming to a middleman.
Yeah.
Where you're coming to a middleman or gaining up on each other, basically. Yeah.
The yeah. third party yeah. is you can either have a middleman at all times to talk about another person, or two people can always gain up on another.
Yeah.
And it makes it dangerous. So I like the concept of having two people, or yeah. always making sure that there's one person or two people with a solid operating agreement that have a combined equity of 51 plus, so that they, you know, who's making the decisions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dan and I know that between us, even if we did bring on a third partner and give them equity, we could create an operating agreement between us, and we can have every hard conversation under the sun. We can involve yeah. lawyers. We can do whatever we need to make sure that we have a clean operating agreement, where if we involve a third party, like, we know we have control.
Yeah. It's so smart.
It's really important. We it did is. Have a third partner.
And we bought him out.
And we bought him out. Yeah. And he's a great guy. Yeah. He actually came up with the name Skrull.
Which is a cool name.
Yeah. yeah. Great name.
Yeah. yeah.
He had
yeah.
a couple other good names
yeah.
too.
Yeah. We did.
Dude, sometimes I feel like I hear a name and I'm like, oh, I just want to start a business just because I like the name.
And it fits. Like, we like it. It fits it exactly fit. What we do. It's not like anybody that sees or hears that isn't going to know, like, almost right out of the gate what we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's something to do with websites, something to do with SEO, something to do with, you know, web design.
So opposite of digital marketing. The Grounded company, where people are like, yeah. I don't know what this is.
But that's okay.
I'm like, no, go to our non-existent website. You'll Amazon, learn all about us.
Nobody. Amazon was the Amazon rainforest, and now they're the one of the largest companies
A
in the world.
Z, dude.
Now they're exactly. the e-commerce rainforest.
Yeah. That's right.
So yeah, tell us about why you don't have a website.
Okay, so there's like a real answer that's kind of scary, but there's three variations of this answer.
Okay, let's hear all three.
If a prospect and I are chatting and they're like, yo, why we can't find you our website.
Yeah.
They love my answer. And I'm like, yeah, look, we're a creative agency and you're paying for our clients are paying for our creative services. I could use your money to build my site. Or I could build stuff for you. It's your call. And they're like, oh, dude, that's pretty cool. I'm like, yeah. So let me show you all the stuff I've built
it's
for
unique.
Everyone else.
Yeah, it's
And
unique.
Then I show them. It's a nice pitch.
Yeah.
Right? I just hit that camera.
You're good.
That's long-term, we need to have a website. In fact, in the next, like, 2 months, we're going to launch a website.
We got you, baby.
But let's talk about the underground website. But the other thing is we genuinely have been so busy
yeah.
trying to keep up with clients. Mm-hmm. And we've never run an ad. I know that's like,
no,
that's not okay. a positive there's nothing, thing to
no,
say.
No,
in here.
Well, no,
Our
there's
first
nothing.
2.5 years were that
we
way.
We didn't yeah. run ads for the first 2 years. There's nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, I would say do everything you can to never touch paid marketing and then introduce it when yeah. you've defined everything, because it's like pouring gas on the fire.
Yeah.
you know?
So no paid ads. I've never slid into anybody's DMs. We've never done a cold call. We've never done any outbound selling at all.
That's amazing.
We haven't needed to. Now, at some point that dries up and you do need to, and I know that. But our business, Harmon Brothers, instantly loaded us up and we're like, wow. Yeah. And they kept feeding us. Mm-hmm. And then we've been really great at having partnerships with other agencies.
Yep.
We've been really great at client referrals, and things just coming to us through organic social media.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the second answer. The third answer, which is like me being very real and vulnerable, as a creative agency, if my site is not unbelievably perfect,
totally,
it does more harm than good.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. It's Have you been to creative agency websites and you're like, this is b-hole. Like this is bad.
Yeah. 100%.
You're judged. Yep. And so, and look, I can always tell a client, they're like, well, I don't really like that. I'm like, well, that's their branding. Let me show you another one. And let me show you the range of work we can do. And, you know, and you can kind of get through that.
Yeah.
But it's also hard. Not everyone has the same
thought
taste and thought. And so what one person could think is great design, another person could be like, this is terrible.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've had a little bit of fear that like, well, how am I going to have a site that hits everybody? I feel like we could design beautiful sites. In fact, we do all the time.
Yep.
But for ourselves, it's been a little scary. And there's also been a level of like arrogance, like, well, I haven't needed one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I think it's a good take. I think at the end of the day, eventually you'll need one.
100%. Yeah. I know I need one. But as we're landing bigger and bigger deals too, it's more about I'm learning it's even as a creative agency, it's more about like a credibility check than a design style.
Yes.
But they're like, look, if we're going to pop you $100K retainer, like I need to know, are you guys a real business?
Are you guys legit?
Like, are you legit? I've even had people that are like, I wasn't so sure. And then you invited us to the office. Like you have an office, you have a team. Like this is real. It's not just like a LinkedIn profile, you know?
For sure.
But I think a website will help us kind of maybe
solidify that.
Yeah. And I'm certain we've lost deals because we haven't lost deals that we've probably never even known were potential deals.
Mm. Yeah.
I think if they get in our funnel, our close rate is wild, but it's because they're coming from partnerships.
Yeah. They're all
inbound.
People. And, yep.
100%. Like your close rate is through the roof on those sort of things.
Totally. Dan and I used to have this like major ego because if we went and
if it's him and I in person.
Yeah. If we went in person,
it was every time
90% chance we closed. Well,
how could you say no to you guys?
But now that's totally different because the only people we're meeting with in person are direct referrals, right? Of course, direct referral. They already have a connection to us. Of course, they're going to close. We thought that was all us, but maybe it was just the system. Now, when you run paid, like I've been humbled so much because I see we get 10 leads a day and our close rate's 5% at the end of the month. And I'm like, wait, why don't 95% of people want to do business with us? And it's right time, right place, right? Like a referral's only going to reach out to you because they're ready.
They're ready.
Yeah.
So, right then. But yeah, it's just really interesting.
Forms. Well,
but yeah, we used to crush it in person. It was kind of funny because we had it was a referral, but it was an in-person meeting a couple weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. And man, it was fun. We got the rush back from like the old days of like going in person and talking to a local
There's
company.
There's something
fun about that. Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Again, there's a rush. We're really salespeople at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right.
An entrepreneur has to be.
Yeah.
And especially I've learned if you're going to go work for a startup or a smaller company and the CEO
is not
able to sell, like freaking run away from that company. Run away.
Yeah.
That's 100%. A problem.
Weirdly, even people like Facebook, for example, right? The weirdest founder on the face of the planet was Mark Zuckerberg. Yet he could get investor money. Like his weirdness was his sales approach. I actually had a manager. I did door-to-door sales when I was 18. And my manager acted shy and acted like he would stumble over his words because it gave, and he told me that people had sympathy for him. and it helped him close more deals.
Hey, you know what? Whatever
floats the boat. He's the guy pretending to be homeless. Yeah. At the end of the day, he goes and gets in his Ferrari and drives home.
Exactly.
He wasn't dishonest. He was naturally a shy guy.
He was just being himself.
Yeah, and he just embraced pieces of himself. And to me, I thought all salespeople were confident go-getters. But instead, he was like a little monotone, shy, stumbled over his words. And that's like the Zuckerberg approach, right? He showed up in flip-flops. And that was during the time when people were wearing suits.
Right. Yes, 100%. Yeah, you would never show up to a VC presentation.
Pitch.
But it is.
Flip-flops were a sales
100%.
Pitch.
That and all the lawyers he brought with him.
And he had some guts to do that at the time. You know?
Yeah.
At 19, I got a job running the Zoomies in Layton. I'd never really had any retail
in the mall.
Experience. Yeah, I opened in that Zoom. That
oh, Zoom's. Really? In the Layton Hills Mall?
So I used to buy skateboards there.
That's awesome.
You mall rats down there. But I remember thinking like, oh, you have to be an extrovert to sell. You have to be aggressive in people's face. And I think a lot of people, when they first meet me, they're like, that dude's an extrovert. And I'm not at all, actually. Like,
you have to define yourself
after,
as that.
After days like today, I need to go and like
decompress
and unwind and refill my tank. This doesn't, not you guys, but like being in these situations doesn't necessarily fill my tank per se.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think I've got to fake being an extrovert in order to be successful and move up in business. I really thought that. And I'm learning more and more. I don't have to be. I just be myself, be who I am. And in some ways, I actually think the harder you try to sell, the less efficient you become at it, right?
Yeah, I use car salesman approach.
Yeah, right? I was sitting in this room earlier talking to a guy, called me an inbound lead, a massive potential. We're talking like six-figure type deal. And he's like, so are you guys interested? And I'm like, look, I think that what you're doing is pretty great. There's some agencies in Utah that I'd recommend that you look at. And he's like, no, well, wait. Like, I want to work with you guys. Are you interested? And I'm like, we're very interested, but I think it's important that you understand your options. And I'm happy to point you in the direction of brands that are agencies that if you choose not to work with us, you'd be really damn proud to work with.
Yeah.
And I'll go head to head against them, certainly. But like, you know,
that's smart
like,
of you, man.
And he goes, I'm telling my CEO that you guys are the preferred vendor that we want to work with. Like, we got you, you know, and it's not like I'm doing mind tricks on the guy or anything. I genuinely think, if I don't win the business, I want him to have a good experience somewhere else. So like avoid this agency or go to that one, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the more you just add value and are helpful,
it'll come
better.
Back.
And you don't need to be anything you're not. If you're an extrovert, be an extrovert. If you're an introvert, be an introvert. If you want to wear flip-flops, wear flip-flops. Like it doesn't matter. Just be you.
Yeah. Well, and I think the humility of that and understanding who you are will help you go further in business too.
100%.
Because you can find... Like, because you've defined your creative agency, right? If somebody came to you and said, will you run ads? You'd be like, no, but we'll make creative for ads. Or, hey, I have a referral for you. Or, I don't know. Do you guys run ads?
We don't run ads.
Yeah. See, so you know who you are.
I mean, you guys have, I sent a deal to you. I apologize. It was not a good deal. But you guys did have a deal with us for like 3 months and then we both walked away. And I think it was for the best because not every brand is the right fit. Right?
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I'm all about like go work with Scroll, go work with marketing mavens if you need email. Like Brittany and Amy are the best. Go work with Greg at Superfuzz if you need web dev. Like I actually think there's a ton of value in recognizing what your agency 100%. Does or doesn't do and then not trying to
just like butt heads with everybody.
Others. Like well, open it up, right? There's enough business for everybody. And I think when you are open with your clients about it, they appreciate it.
Definitely.
They like it.
The honesty and the transparency is everything.
Yeah.
Do you have how do you define what type of creative agency you are? Like, for example, have you heard of Amply? They're a web design agency.
Cade Beagle.
His name's Cade Beagle.
I think so, yeah.
He does amazing Webflow websites, just beautiful. Oh, and he works for
they specialize with like working with SaaS companies.
Yeah, SaaS companies specifically. So. And I sometimes a company comes across our table and I'm like, you should go work with Ampley. Like, he would just crush it. And we would be so subpar for what you're looking for. Like, because we don't specialize in Webflow high-end unique websites. We specialize in templated home service websites, right? Yeah. So, like, how have you defined what type of creative agency you are? And what kind of creative agency are you?
Maybe you're still doing that.
I think maybe a little bit. But, you know, the agency in Salt Lake that I've had a brand crush on for a decade, super top secret. I don't know if you guys know these guys.
Oh, they're called Super Top Secret?
Yeah, their website is wearetopsecret.com or wearesupertopsecret.com.
I don't even know if people could see our screen. But
they are such a good agency. They've done...
What a cool name.
I know, right? And it's all like Illuminati type.
That's right here.
We Are Top Secret, yeah. So their website initially seems pretty basic, but if you go to case studies... Oh, I mean, cool. Riot Games, Rozzy, Pellegrisso, those are Ghost. Those are just like we'll a couple. We'll link this
so that people can go look at it.
Dude, their work, they did all the branding for J-Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And R&R Barbecue.
Very cool branding. Like, J-Dogs has awesome branding.
These guys are great. So when I have a company come to me and they're like, we need hardcore branding, I'm like,
look. These guys.
We can do it. And we do it at this price point. If you're willing to spend more, like, let me introduce you to Jared, because it doesn't get better than this.
Yeah.
And I've talked to Jared, and it's funny because Jared would define Super Top Secret. I certainly would define Super Top Secret as being a branding agency.
Yeah.
And when I talked to Jared, I'm like, well, how do you measure success with a customer? You know? And he was like, oh, it's easy. They're giving us high fives instead of middle fingers at the end. Like, they're proud of the brand. Okay. They want to put
the
sticker on their car. They want a billboard. They want everyone to know, like, this is our brand.
Yeah. They go to market hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, frankly, I'm not interested in that. I mean, I love it and I have deep admiration for it, but I'm not interested in it. Another one would be like Creatably or even Harman Brothers. Hero Video, massive price points,
viral Chamber video.
Media. Chamber Media. They're doing a Hero Video for $250,000 a video, right?
Yeah.
We all know that video, if it's crushing, maybe has a 6-month runway.
Yep. Doesn't it has a shelf life? Eventually, it goes away,
and it cannot stand alone.
Yep.
Right. So you still have to have other creative.
Yep.
So we share clients with Creatably, and we're like, use Creatably for
their
two hero videos.
Hero video.
And by the way, for the price you pay for one hero video with Creatably, we will give you content for the whole year. We will give you supporting content the whole year. So the way I define Grounded is we are a performance-driven creative agency. Like, my background is not creative, but my background is being a CMO. I understand it. And I can sit down and be like, we just had a client the other day and the ad buyer's like, I don't think these ads are working. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a pretty vague statement. Like, what isn't working? And he was like, well, I don't know. They're just not working. And I'm like, are you getting efficient clicks or not? Or like, what's the conversion rate? Like, let's break down the numbers, right?
And let's actually define what isn't working.
And we pull it up and we're like, well, holy cow. Like, your cost per click is, people would kill to have that sort of cost per click. Like, you're paying nothing to get people to your site right now.
Yeah.
And at the time, all we were doing was ad creative. I'm like, where are you sending them? He was like, homepage.
Oh.
I'm like, dude, your ads are working fine. Your site experience is terrible. Yeah. Let's look at your PDP. Can we push them right to a PDP? Yeah. PDP wasn't great. So we're like, all right, well, let's rebuild your PDP. But also, in some of these ads, we're talking about multiple products. Let's build a custom landing page and see what happens.
Yep.
Dude, we launched that. Conversion goes through the roof. And now all of a sudden they're like, okay, ROAS on ads are great. And we're like,
yeah, because it's cool. Hyper-focused.
You know what we should do now? How many people are dropping off? Well, now let's run some cart abandon emails. We'll do the design work.
Yeah.
Here's how you should run them through Klaviyo. I'm not running them, but like, you go do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens there. And so... everything we do, we want to be closely connected to the numbers. And one, even brands that are spending significant money every month, they can't afford to have bad creative. They can't afford to run paid ads and have it not work.
And we know how that goes. Like we don't spend a lot. We spend maybe $250 a day right now on ads. And we notice conversion rates drop and all of a sudden our sales just start to plummet. And it's always due to creative, especially because in ad platforms now, they do so much of the work for you.
Native lead forms and everything. Yeah.
Like ad platforms are so good at targeting. It used to be that ad buyers had to be wizards. And now there's so much built into these ad platforms that you need to put in your targeting demographics. You need to do your retargeting. You need to build lookalike audiences. But these ad platforms are going to try and serve the best customers because they want you to keep spending money. And what it's turning into is a creative game. Those with the best creative and those with the most consistent creative win.
Every day.
Because even if you get the ad in front of the right person, if you don't get them to stop the scroll.
Yeah, if you don't hook them.
It doesn't matter, no way. Right? Like, it's all about the first 3 seconds, maybe even faster. Grounded, we operate on the Cocoa Melon. Have you guys seen that cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
Every 2 seconds, it's a new point of view.
Yep.
It's a new audio. It's a new.
Well, there's like a, there's like an actual. That's like the Cocoa Melon phenomenon.
Yeah.
Like the in the ad world. Yeah, it's like it's literally awesome, what they call it. Yeah.
It's crack.
Yeah.
And I've never done crack, but it's what I would imagine.
I'm sure it's like that.
Yeah.
It's like caffeine.
So I've heard. No, I have had plenty of caffeine.
I think, and to help people understand that maybe new to the marketing world or new to the agency world, what we're talking about with like a PDP would be a product description page. So helping people understand that instead of running an ad to a homepage that might be generic, run an ad to the specific product.
Yeah. Or a specific hyper-driven, like landing page.
Noboso's a new client of ours. They're all about foot health, right? And so we're creating ads against a whole bunch of different variables. One might be just recovery after a workout. One might be plantar fasciitis. So if we're serving an ad that's all about plantar fasciitis, well, then the landing page should be
the whole experience needs to be about that.
Everything. And it's not just the landing page, right? But then if they bail on that page, well, the page abandonment emails should be about plantar fasciitis. And if they go to your cart and then they abandon your cart abandonment and your direct mailers that go afterwards all need to be about that same thing. And I think people are nervous of doing that.
Yeah.
But when you get hyper targeted like that, it goes crazy.
Yeah, it does. It really does across the board. Yeah. And it's really the only way to do it. I don't know why people do it any other way, really, at the end of the day.
I just think there's a lot of education that needs to happen, especially with smaller companies. Like most of Grounded's clients are out of that phase, but we still get some. And our underground clients, which we've already started signing, they're very much this way. Like we had a client come to us and she's like, okay, first thing that we need to do is update my website. And I'm like, and why is that? And she's like, look at it. And I'm like, no, I
get you.
It's gross. Yeah. But why do you think that that's important? And she's like, well, cause that's my website. And I'm like, how many people a month are visiting your website?
Yeah.
And her name's Allison. And she was like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, well that's a problem. Let me show you how to look.
Let's
fix
that.
We get in and we look and I was like, you had 300 people hit your website last month. Last month, you had 300 people.
Big leagues.
Why would you spend any money
on updating
to update your site for 300 people? You know what you should do? Invest in organic social media. Let's get some ads going. Let's drive some people to the website. She was like, but if I'm driving people to the website and it doesn't look good, nothing's going to happen. I'm like, you'd be surprised how many crappy websites convert.
Perform. Crappy to what you think is crappy. Right. And that you got to switch your POV. Yeah. It has to be the customer. Because you know what? If your customer is like 65, they don't care what it looks like. Yeah. They just care if they can navigate it and do exactly what they want it to do immediately.
Yeah.
You know? And so you have to think about the customer first. Yeah,
functionality is more important than design on a site.
Well, that's ClickFunnels made that very clear. Unless you're a creative agency. No, totally. ClickFunnels made that super clear. Like when Russell Brunson started ClickFunnels, he was like, let's go back to the old school like way of thinking. Emotional copy, in my opinion, looks like just garbage. Like these just are very poorly designed funnels, at least, funnels, but they convert very well. And it's because of the copy. It's because of the
he's proved it too.
Yeah, he's 100%, hundreds of millions of dollars through their funnels. You know,
I mean, even look at like Nike's website. It doesn't have any, there's not a lot of crazy stuff going on. It's like, here's our product. You click on it. Great model, great product image.
Yeah.
Buy it or don't. Walk away.
Well, it's all, I totally agree.
Nike's,
it's all about ease
Nike's
of
got
use.
The brand now. So like, they can get away with that.
Theo is seven now, but when he was probably.
Is this your son?
Yeah, he's my youngest. Okay. I've got four. My wife couldn't keep her hands off me. So we have four.
That's
she
awesome.
Hates that joke, by the way. I try to feed it in as often as I can. And I go home and she'll listen to the podcast or whatever. And she'll be like, you're making it out like I'm some sort of like floozy. And I'm like, but you're my floozy.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Fine. You're my floozy. Fine. I love that.
But when he was like maybe around 4 years old, the only thing this kid wanted to eat was Pop-Tarts. And he figured out that he could go like, Alexa, buy me Pop-Tarts. And they'd just show up on the door.
Gosh.
We had like hundreds of Pop-Tarts show up one day. And we're like,
what is this?
The hell happened? Like boxes and boxes of Pop-Tarts.
Still going through them.
And we're like, what's happening?
That's
and
epic.
So we go
Good
and we look
you,
and we're like,
Theo.
We did
Keep
order
doing
it
that.
On Amazon. Who did it? And my four-year-old's like, oh, Dad, I do it like this, you know? And but it's... Amazon's made it so easy that a four-year-old can have Pop-Tarts delivered to their house.
Oh, and you
Your
know,
your website
for
has to function. That's what it's about.
Yeah. And you know for a fact Amazon did that on purpose.
Oh, for sure.
Just get some extra revenue. They're like, let's make this as easy as possible. Well, no, literally, like, let's make this as easy as possible for kids to be able to do this.
Although, have you guys heard of Oops?
Uh-uh.
No.
I hate it. I know you did door-to-door sales, but like I despise.
I did door-to-door sales for 6 weeks, came home.
Okay, good for you.
I've never done it.
So Oops, they give you a big, huge blue bag. It's like the cost of Amazon for the year, like $120 or whatever.
Okay.
You can put anything you want in that. Stuff to go to Savers, the thrift store.
Whatever, yeah.
You can put cardboard boxes out on your front porch and people like DoorDash will come pick it up and take it to the DI for you.
Oh, they will, wow.
Like, interesting.
Oh, I have heard of this. $50.
Is this local here in Utah?
They just hit me in Kaysville. I got signed up.
Wait, it's $120
a year.
A year. Okay, my wife told me about this.
And if you buy something anywhere, you go to Vans at Gateway.
They'll do your returns
for
you.
And you don't like it, you can do the return. They'll drive it to Gateway, return the product for you. Done.
Interesting. How big do they take stuff?
The bag is huge. Like...
Interesting.
Huge.
And do you tip them?
No, I just leave it on my porch.
Oh, so there's no like Uber driver tip.
You just schedule it and then you put the blue bag with all the crap on the porch and then they take that and they leave you a new blue bag.
Yeah, it's very similar to Dree. Like it's probably this is a Dree model and we've used Dree before. So that's cool. I'm going to have to look into that.
So I think the concept there is simplicity is like and providing solutions is what's going to drive customers, right? So
I think
your website just has to be simple enough and functional enough to work. Simple enough, like the way Amazon has created.
KISS principle.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
The Grounded's website that we're working on is like two pages. Like I don't want it to be huge.
Yeah, small.
Underground that we're building, I'm having this debate with the team a little bit. Like, I think I'm pushing probably too far, but I don't even want a form fill on the website for Underground. I just want to, we're building it in Shopify. We're building it in Shopify. And we're like, these are the packages you just buy directly off the website.
Oh,
like
cool.
You don't have to talk to us.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it wouldn't hurt to put the contact us form. I'm like, it gives people an opportunity to call us instead of just buy.
Yeah.
Like, how do we make this as simple as possible? It might backfire and might not work, but like,
You gotta be,
you gotta try.
You gotta take risks and make unique approaches.
I'd love to see a B2B company take more of a e-commerce type vibe.
Well, we've thought about it for a long time.
Scroll as easy as Stance sells a pair of socks.
Yeah.
Like, and you do that.
Yep.
Gangbusters, dude.
Yeah. And we've thrown around a lot of ideas for that. We've also thrown around white label marketplace ideas for other agencies to buy services and onboard. Give us about a month and a month or two and you'll see it happen.
Yeah. So,
Although I'm mad that I'm behind you guys, but
I like well, luckily different services.
Hey, you know what? We'll get you on our white label marketplace.
You gotta
have the
biggest cojones to go first.
Yep.
You got to be the smartest guy to go second. You got to be really stupid not to be third. So as long as I'm second, I'm good. You're solid.
Dude, that is awesome. A bit for social.
Yeah.
I love that.
So to kind of wrap this up, I have a couple things that I'd love to ask you. One, it sounds like you, Nick, at Grounded are very involved with your customers as the owner. Like you talk about this strategy you have with this footwear brand. Yeah. How do you scale? How do you get to the point where you scale it when you're so involved?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in phases, you know, the first phase was I was involved in everything. Single thing. Now I'm really involved in the strategy. And then my team's like, okay, we've got the strategy. We have a session. And then they go build
the execution.
And like a lot of times I don't even see the whips before we send them to clients. I don't see the final assets before we send them to clients. We've got that part figured out. The next step for me is coaching my team and bringing someone in who has that brand strategy experience to scale that. But
and that's hard. That's like the most, I think the hardest piece to replace.
It's going to be the hardest piece to scale always.
Yep.
Right. But part of, I guess, another thing that we're looking at is how do we distinguish customers between Grounded and Underground? And Grounded is very bespoke. It's custom. Like, but you got to spend some cash to get in on it, but the return is there. And then Underground is very much like, this is the exact process. This is how we work. The team follows the flow. The customer follows the flow. And you become, my team hates it when I say this, but like Underground needs to basically be a creative factory.
Yep.
And Grounded is a creative agency.
Yeah.
And everything's custom from the get-go. And when you start separating that way and you make, and Shane, I learned this from our talk at lunch, like operations and the process is just everything. This year we've completely shifted our process. Dude,
what's been your biggest, what'd you shift?
We could probably 4X what we've done with the exact same team with this process now.
Yeah. What was the biggest change in your process?
From
the operations guy.
Yeah. One, I think that you guys have talked about is setting very clear expectations with clients.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. From the get-go, it changes the game.
From the proposal to the SOW, to the onboarding, it's all got to be like, this is it. Right.
Yep.
But we work in 2-week sprints. So I came from tech where we would do scrum of scrums and sprints and those sort of things. So like if today was our first sprint, we start the meeting by looking at the ads that we delivered and the creative that we delivered 2 weeks ago.
What's coming for the next week? Yep.
How'd it perform? What are the numbers? What's good? What's bad? Great. Based on all of that, what should we deliver in the next 2 weeks? And we align on what that looks like. And then a week from today, we would deliver your first like work in progress.
Yeah, your deliverables. Like,
you have 2 days to give feedback, knock out the feedback.
And then go from there.
On the second week, we deliver finals and we start the process over.
And I love that.
But we will have conversations with clients where we're like, okay, you're asking for 10 things this sprint. Based on the workload, we could do like...
Scope it out.
We could do 4 or we could do more, but it's going to cost you more for those 2 weeks. Like,
I love.
Do you want to pay the extra or do you just want to deprioritize until next sprint?
So you're mastering your like your scope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need
Which is hard when you do so many different things. Hard. And because people are like, well,
scope creep is very
real.
Well,
if you're going to do 10 static ads, why can't you do 10 video ads? And you're like,
it's a whole Because one moment.
Video ad takes as long as 10 static ads, maybe longer than 10 static. Yeah. You know? So you have to kind of like coach the client and teach them that. But I'll tell you what, in a short amount of time, as soon as they get it figured out, our clients are just coming back.
Yeah, they're just like, "Well, this is amazing.
This is the best thing ever."
And we do that. Is clear expectations and clear deliverables. I mean,
as long as you hit that and you actually do it, you're solid.
And our pitch is like, "Look, if you want to run this big go-to-market campaign for a launch happening in 4 months, we should talk about that. Let's do that separate. But we are a performance-driven agency, and every 2 weeks we want to be able to pivot. So." Because something may or may not work. If we're always planning 6 months ahead and then something hits and works, how the hell are we supposed to like
pivot then
accelerate on that? Or if it's not working, how are we going to go change 6 months worth of work?
Totally.
Like, it has to be kind of like a just in time shipping and delivery almost.
Yeah. And we do the same, we do very similar, sprint method, but it's every week. So especially with our, we do weekly meetings with our partner program clients and it's the same method.
Yeah, here's what we're going to do for you this week. It's in an agenda. We're going to go over it on a call and we're going to agree to it on the call so that we all know what's coming next week. And guess what? The call's recorded too.
Well, the conversation we had at lunch 6 months ago and then working with Taylor on your team for a short amount of time with
the
worst client ever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm like, I hear what Shane is saying. I'm seeing the process. And frankly, like we're kind of taking our own version of what you guys have taught us through that.
Yeah.
So it's been awesome.
Well, I'm glad.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And let us know, man. I think the biggest thing I think for agencies is scope creep. It is such a big thing. So, and so I think for us, that's kind of our next little piece of trying to figure out like, hey, if you want us to do more things, especially on the design side, but on ads, on anything, it's literally for any one of our stuff. If you want more than what we're doing in the time frame that we're doing it, you can pay us more, sure, right? And we've never gotten to that point yet, but
it is. And I think in some areas, like there's the Grounded company, and I have Chop Shop, which is video, and people are like, "Why do you have a video agency when you have your design agency?" And it's like, it's really a DBA under Grounded. I'm still billing under Grounded, like whatever, but. I think it's important for two reasons, and maybe I'm just drinking my own Kool-Aid here, but one is the operating expenses are so different between the two.
Oh, very much so.
So if I have a client who one sprint or 1 month is on design, and then they're like, "Hey, next month we don't want design, we want video." And I'm like, okay, well, it's cool. A totally different operating expense for me. And it doesn't, margin doesn't transfer everything. And the other part that's different is the process, right? Like I can't put someone in a 2 week sprint for video. So Chop Shop has a different process than Grounded.
Wow. What a great way to set that up.
I like that. That's getting some wheels turning in my head.
It's pretty cool because when people go, "Oh, you guys do video," and we'll be like, "Right now you're on design with Grounded. If you want Chop Shop if you want video, Chop Shop is our agency. This is how the scope of work looks. This is the process. And then there's no like, "Hey man, just like flow me a video this month," you know?
Yeah. You're
like, no, they're like,
we have separate processes. Thank you.
And clients think that they're two totally different companies.
Yeah, I love that approach.
It's been interesting for sure. I think the problem with Chop Shop to begin with was I had another one called Brenda, which was a software.
Oh,
and the challenge with Brenda was the team's core capabilities and skill sets at Grounded were not the same core skill sets that needed to make Brenda work.
Translate.
And so it didn't work. So like I swung pretty big. I lost some cash on that last year, like six figures sort of cash on that deal. But I learned from it like, oh, well, if I just have redundancy and skill set in these separate agencies, Grounded, Chop Shop, Underground,
they should be able to all
then
work together.
Then it should work,
right? For sure.
And it should be a bit easier. So, and separating them that way really has been nice for customers. There's just clear. I mean, even the only way I've sold Underground so far is prospects came to Grounded, wanted to work with us. We're like, "Oh, that retainer is too high. I can't do it."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "We have a sister agency called the Underground. Here's how it works.
Here's how this
works."
Then they were like, "This is a direct intro.
Okay, sign me up."
Yeah. I'm like, for sure. Sweet. That makes total sense.
And you know what? I know they're like Wallaroo does the same thing as an agency. Yeah. They have like their higher end agency and then they have clients that can't afford it and they send them to a different agency because it is a different process. It's a different system. It's a
totally different product.
What a cool approach. I think that's something we're going to take notes on.
Yeah.
As far as like last question for you to wrap this up is what advice do you have to people starting agencies? Because you've now created one. You're over 2 years into this. You're profitable. You're growing. You're releasing new services. Like, what advice do you have for other people that are either starting agencies or trying to grow them or any business for that matter?
Cash flow is everything, dude. Like, everything. It is the most important thing. So learn how to sell. Learn how to manage your money, learn how to grow your money. And I think January was a rough month and we were totally fine. And we rebounded because we were always selling because we've got good cash flow, you know, because yep. we're letting our cash
dictate what's going on
and work yeah. for us and, yep. and do more. So it wasn't something that is naturally a skill set or like I'm super experienced in, but that's where I became a student and I'm still trying to learn more. I don't think yeah. you can ever
learn enough,
figure that out, but sell it, save as much as you freaking can, and then spend in ways that are going to multiply your money.
I love
that. And if you do those three things, like it doesn't matter what you're building, I think it'll work.
Yeah. Wow. Really cool.
Yeah. I just think that something a lot of young entrepreneurs or early startup founders forget is that you have to be wise with your cash. You have to be conservative with your cash and make sure that you're using it to grow instead of putting it in your own pocket.
Yeah, right? Honestly, yeah. at least it's the first game. Little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least the first little bit. You got to get to the point where you can pay yourself because eventually, man, you'll burn out if you can't do that very quickly. Yeah. So you got to get to a point where you can. But
Maybe a side piece of advice is if you're thinking about being an entrepreneur and you're not quite sure yet, find a company in a role that allows you to be an entrepreneur.
Oh yeah.
And
like, and find a mentor.
I was an entrepreneur for years and it teaches you so much. Like a weird comparison, but if you're going to try to build a new department or a new program inside a company, you have to go to the CFO and get them to give you budget.
Yeah.
That's a lot like going out and getting an investor.
You have to sell.
Like if you think about it, literally have to sell. Right? Or you're a team of one building something internally. Well, you're probably going to need to lean on people outside of your department to offer up their time and skill sets in the building to help you. And so it's like a recruiting and a partnership biz dev type thing. Like if you really are building something inside a business, all of those skills do transfer as long as you can recognize like what I'm doing here applies to entrepreneurship in this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's wild how valuable it is to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and you get paid totally. To do it.
Yeah, you get paid to learn. You get paid to learn. I
and
love
a lot
that.
Of times you're getting paid and you can do your thing on the side.
Yeah.
While it's happening. Yeah, right?
Totally.
Totally. Yeah. Dude, oh my gosh.
Thanks for the time today, man.
I hope I didn't just ramble.
No, gold it's been awesome. Nuggets.
Like, I think this is so valuable. I feel like I could learn so much from you. From dude, everything same. That you're building over there. So
the
yeah.
two of you cool. guys have built No Smoke, one of the coolest agencies that I've interacted with.
Appreciate
well,
it.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan.
We're thanks, man. Yeah.
We need
appreciate
better
that.
Branding and content.
So. And we're working. This is why we're working on it. So it's fun.
I think you guys are doing pretty dang good. I like thank the you. Ads. What's his name over there in the corner?
Cody.
Cody. The ad where he just drops all the foul language. Yeah. That was my favorite one, dude.
We'll cut this part out because yeah, his wife
would freak out if she knew about that.
Well, he didn't really swear.
No, we bleeped it.
It was fake. We bleeped it. He said freaking and you guys bleeped over his mouth.
He said potty.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're working on
dude,
it.
Dude, I know. That ad we're not running anymore. It just
dried out.
Because every yeah. ad has...
Shelf life.
Every yep. freaking ad.
Anyways. Yeah.
But dude, thank you so thank much.
Thanks for having me.
You want to plug yeah. yourself. This is your 30 seconds to plug.
Yeah. No. So handles. Do you have like Instagram, LinkedIn? You're big on LinkedIn.
I try to interact on LinkedIn. Yeah. Nick Staggy.
Nick Staggy on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then do you do Instagram, Grounded Company anywhere?
Yeah, I think it's Grounded Co.
Yeah.
If you go to my LinkedIn, you can eventually like navigate your way through. Soon we'll have the groundedco.com. But
cool.
Until then, just go to LinkedIn.
Email Nick.
Yeah.
Or reach out on LinkedIn. Me. Maybe he'll give you
or hit up Scroll and then we'll introduce you to Nick until he has a website.
That's what you guys should do.
Yeah, we want the referral bonus.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Oh, 100%. My goodness. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks man. Again. Well, Nick, so much.
Thank you guys.
Appreciate it. It was awesome.
Likewise.